I was looking at the windows here, and in each of the four windows, there's a different scene. And probably if I was sitting there, the four windows would show a different scene as well. And there, I'm sure it's different. And it's possible to look at just one of the windows and convince myself that that is the whole thing, that that is the truth, that's the world. And then I look at the next one and I have to take in some other information and acknowledge that there is something else. And then I look at the other one and it's so different from where I'm sitting. These two, I can only see clouds and sky. And those two, I can only see trees, dirt, plants. Completely different scene. If I went out the door, I would see the whole thing differently again. In the first sitting this morning, those two windows, the shutters were closed. So I could not see outside from those two windows. And it would be possible to even think that there was nothing out there because I could not see it. It was closed. And in my room, the same thing earlier happened. I opened the shutters and suddenly there was a sign that said, "Continente," in big red letters. And I thought, oh no, oh no. So I moved, and there I saw just some sweeping big structures from the forum. No. And I moved again. And this time I saw only the trees and the field, just the vegetation, and thought, okay. But then I realized that there was the tree that is on the verge of falling. I don't know if everyone is aware of this, but there's a tree in which we were told it risks falling at any moment, so please don't park the car there. Which, in fact, is the truth of everything at every moment, but we still park cars and walk under trees. But everything is falling above our heads and below our feet at every moment. And I looked at the tree and I thought, that tree's not falling. It looks straight, tall, sturdy. But then I noticed that the roots don't have much earth below them. And I don't know why, but that is what I observed. Which makes the tree not stable. And my imagination started thinking of the tree falling, and I thought, maybe that tree is really tall. It might even fall on the building. And thought, okay, I don't want to look at that tree. So I had to keep shifting my perspectives until finally I just stopped and took it all as it was. Dropped my ideas about what I wanted to see and didn't want to see, and what was nice to look at and not nice, and projecting into the future of what might happen, or thinking to the past. Someone said about this place, it probably before the auto route and the shopping mall, it was a very quiet, isolated place. I dropped my ideas about before, after, ahead, what will be, what should be. Looking at the four different views of the window, I dropped ideas about what, if the wall were not there, what would it look like? If I moved here, what does it look like? And just took it as it was. And each window became a line or a verse in a poem, which expresses just what is in very different ways. In order to see that, however, I had to drop my fixed perspective. I couldn't limit myself to, from where I'm sitting is the true perspective. And drop even the idea that I shouldn't have ideas about liking or disliking. Just acknowledging them, letting them be. There's a famous story from the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, of two good friends who are seeking. They want to, we say, awaken. They're not happy with the way their lives are, and they want to see things as they are, as we say. Sometimes this is called enlightenment, sometimes awakening. It just means being here now, experiencing things as they are. And these two friends had this desire. So they went to see a teacher who said to them, okay, it's simple. Do not reject anything. Nothing needs to be thrown away. Okay. So they go out into their lives, and one of them, who loved the nightlife, partying, women, song, said, okay, nothing needs to be thrown away. And he began opening places where people could come and drink and have parties, and he opened brothels and began making a lot of money from these activities. And the other friend thought, no, that's not the way. And he also had lived a lifestyle similar to that before. Also had a tendency to become angry. Often wanted good meals, was jealous if someone had a nice piece of jewelry or had a more beautiful wife. And instead of, as the other one had done, seeking more wives, more beautiful jewelry, richer meals, he just acknowledged that he had these desires and these passions. And he looked at them, remembering that the teacher had said, nothing needs to be rejected. He didn't reject them. He didn't cultivate them. And he, something happened for him that did not happen for the other one. What happened was, he saw the inconsistency of these things. Something like seeing that the tree has no ground in which to take hold. It will fall. As long as he didn't cultivate the ground and fuel these passions and desires, there was no problem. We can say he saw through them and was therefore free. The two friends met up again and went back to see the teacher. And each of them told their stories. And the first one, when the teacher told him no, that he hadn't understood, and that what he had done would not lead him to where he wanted to go, and in fact had made his situation more complicated and more difficult and more painful than it had been before, he was devastated and was so angry that he killed the teacher. This is, we sometimes say in English, this is the equivalent of killing the messenger. The messenger arrives with something we don't want to hear and we kill the messenger. I only say, tell this story as an example of how we often behave. If someone tells us, you're fine as you are, nothing needs to be rejected, we misunderstand and think, okay, then I should, I like rich food, so I should then cultivate that desire and eat more rich food. There's nothing wrong with liking rich food, so I will do it more. Or we think it's bad to like rich food, so I will not reject my desire, but I will not satisfy myself either. I will not eat. I will starve myself. I will not eat any food, therefore. When in fact, by not rejecting, we let things be. We sit here in this room and sometimes it feels cold, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes the noise goes on, sometimes it doesn't. We have an idea that we want the room to be a certain way. We want it to be warm, or we want it to be cold. We don't want the noise, or we prefer that noise because when there's that noise, we don't hear another noise. Or when that noise stops, then we notice the noise outside that we didn't notice before. We notice people coughing, we notice people breathing loud, we notice people moving. We have opinions about that. We become caught up in these, I don't like that, or I do like that, this. And we can say that there's a lot of noise in that. Our mind is noisy with all of that, of all of this wanting it to be a certain way, wanting silence, We are very noisy. We can be very, we can move a lot in not wanting to move. So we make an extreme effort to not move a single hair while we're sitting. And it becomes very uncomfortable. And we're struggling not to move. And in fact, in that struggle, we're moving all over the place. We say in the, there's a Zen story where a student comes and asks the teacher, how can I how can I be free from hot and cold? Or how can I get rid of hot and cold? Is maybe what it is. And the teacher says, go where there is no hot and cold. And the student says, where is there no hot and cold? Of course, he only knows where there is hot and cold. And he usually likes the hot place when he's coming from a cold place, and he likes the cold place when he's coming from a hot place. And the teacher says, kill yourself with the cold and kill yourself with the hot. With the heat. Meaning the same thing as not being fixed that this perspective is the right one instead of that perspective being the right one. When it's cold, be cold. Be totally cold. When it's hot, be hot, totally hot. Nothing outside of hot, nothing outside of cold. Because what causes our problem with hot and cold, as I said, is the relationship that we're making. We want something other than what we have. We have two recorders here. As I'm speaking, I'm not thinking, I will talk to this one because it records better. Or, this is the one we will use because it's white and this one is black. It's just what it is, and we're just here. And maybe there will be a difference in the sound. And maybe one will be chosen over the other when we want to use it. Maybe they will both be valuable because they will have different qualities. We don't know, and it doesn't matter. As soon as I put my ideas on it, I'm moving beyond just what it is. And so what does all of this have to do with sitting here for 3 days? I don't know. It's just I guess sitting here for 3 days, moment after moment, or just this moment, if you can return to whatever is here now, what we say in Zen, take a step back and turn the light inside here. Then you have a possibility of being the silence, which you are already. But when I say being it, is you have the possibility of experiencing it directly, of experiencing the truth about yourself, which is this silence. Which sometimes involves laughter, tears, joy, anger. At every moment, it's something different. I heard a story of a man and a woman, and they had met and they really liked each other, but they each had very different lives. And the man said to the woman, "I don't want to be a rock in your garden, a stone in your garden. I don't want to disrupt your garden." And she said, "You are the garden." And the truth, that's the truth. You are the garden. And you are the stone. And you are the tree falling. And the continent sign, and the clouds, and the heating noise, which hasn't made a noise since I've started talking, has it, or have I not heard? Oh, you turned it off. Okay. No. I thought I had attained some advanced state of heightened awareness that included everything and no separation, and no longer was aware of the noise. Sometimes the appropriate response is to turn it off. Sometimes it's not. I think if we turned it off all the time, we would probably be cold here. I don't know. I don't know what relationship exactly there is between the noise and the heat, but I'm sure there is some. So while you are sitting here, you can practice what I call yes meditation. And it doesn't matter what other practice you have while you're sitting here. I'm sure everyone has something that they're doing, whether they're aware of it or not. They're all actively engaged in something, I'm sure. And yes meditation just means whatever arises, say yes. It doesn't mean, and the yes doesn't mean liking or disliking. This is a yes that is before liking and disliking. It's a yes that says yes to liking and disliking. It's a yes that has, in English, yes, the letter Y is like this. And that is this opens as wide as you can fathom. It's a wide open yes. That doesn't work in French. Well, in French it's an O, oui, so it's a circle, which is big enough to include everything. In Portuguese, what is it? An S, which, okay, we could say it's a spiral. Endless. It's a yes that is, nothing is outside of it, this yes. Because there is no inside or outside in this yes. And so, in a very concrete way, as you're sitting on your cushion, moment after moment, bored, impatient, sleepy, happy, peaceful, uncomfortable. However you are experiencing it, yes. One of the Buddha's more famous closest students was the student called Ananda, and he was actually the Buddha's cousin. And he was very close to the Buddha and served him as his assistant for many years, and was supposedly the student who knew the most about the Buddha's teachings. He had heard all of the talks. He was the equivalent of the recorder. He could repeat it all. If anyone had a question about when the Buddha had said this and where and what, who he had spoken with, Ananda knew it. But Ananda had not awakened, as we say. He knew all the words. He could repeat it all, but he hadn't experienced for himself what was being said. And after the Buddha died, his closest students gathered together and decided that they would have a congress, a session where they would decide how to proceed then, what they should do now that the Buddha had died. And they invited only the close disciples who had realized what we say their true nature, things as they are, who had awakened to this aspect of reality. And Ananda was not invited. And he was devastated. And the others were quite sad as well, but they couldn't invite Ananda because this was the criteria that they had established. So Ananda went and in his own home or wherever, I don't know what the living conditions were, but by himself, while the others were meeting somewhere else, in his despair, he decided to sit and sit and sit. He remembered this is what the Buddha had done, and the Buddha had always told them, sit and realize it for yourself. Don't believe what I say. Experience it for yourself. And so he did it. Different stories say different amounts of time. It was a long time while the others were meeting. Some say all night. And so Ananda sat there and nothing happened. He was just doing the same thing he had always done, waiting, searching, grasping, wondering, what is it? What don't I see? Where is it? It's got to be somewhere. Maybe I should look here. Maybe I should look there. I should try harder. I'm not concentrated enough. I'm not sitting properly. I should sit longer. They have something I don't have. What is it? Remembering all of the Buddha's words, all of these things he had heard for 40 years, and that he had stocked very organized in his mind, going over it all. Nothing. And finally, after hours and hours and hours, probably the whole night, he gave up. And at that moment, he saw things just as they were. Nothing to get. The words were no longer important. There was no reason that he needed to be anywhere other than where he was. Now we can look at this story and think, okay, I just drop it. It's not so easy. And every step of his way, Ananda, every minute he spent with the Buddha, every minute he spent with the others, all of the time he spent thinking, digesting, listening, repeating, all of the struggles he had, all of the years, all of those minutes sitting in that last night, they were all part of his way. At the moment when he dropped his ideas about his way, when he gave up trying to get something, is when he was free. But he had to make each step in order to get there. In order to get here yesterday, we had to cover every centimeter of the road from Lisbon. And we even drove around in this little area for quite some time. Lost. We drove within meters of this building. Twice, three times. Didn't see it. Finally, after asking many, many people, we visited a number of service gas stations in the area. Even calling the place here. Finally, we reached Claudia, who said, okay, after trying to explain it to us, and we didn't get it, okay, she said, I will come out to the end of the road and I will wait for you there. And at this point, after we had dropped, okay, fine, she was going to meet us, we didn't have to look for it anymore. As we were driving by the last time, we saw it. It was right there. Of course, we still couldn't see how to get to it, but it was there. It was a very interesting lesson, made more complicated for Sophie and I because we don't speak Portuguese, so we really didn't know what was going on. But I'm not sure that Isabel and Tomás were any more informed than we were. It doesn't mean that if we had not been looking for it, we would have found it. We had to go through everything we went through. And other people didn't go through that. That was their way. This serves as a metaphor simply for our life. What we are looking for is right here. And yet we have to go through all of the turning around and going up hills and down hills and back roads and the wrong turns and getting lost and then having to take a huge turn around the forum to come back here. We have to go through all of it. It's not even, and when I say we have to, it sounds like some sort of duty. It's beautiful, all of that. They say in the Buddhist stories say that in his last night, the Buddha, of his final awakening, when the terrible figure called Mara comes to tempt him with all of his beautiful seductive daughters and luxurious clothing and stories of fame and power and wealth. And he resists them all. He resists them in the sense that he knows that Mara is just an aspect of himself. And these are just different aspects of himself. And he is saying yes to them. And in the traditional stories, they say each one of Mara's arrows that he was shooting at the Buddha, from each one sprung 100 flowers. meaning that each one of these aspects of himself that he was thinking of as shit, something bad, was not bad at all and didn't need to be thrown away. As with gardens, we take that and we use it to, we use what we think of as waste, and it actually helps the plants. Sometimes, in strange, the way that our world functions in modern times, we throw away our waste and we buy someone else's waste to cultivate our garden. Farmers sometimes do this. Not so much anymore because we've figured out that that's not skillful. But we do that in other ways in our lives. The equivalent of the friend who cultivates, uses what is, instead of misinterpreting, not rejecting, as building up. So when we sit here, can we say yes to whatever arises? And as the Buddha, when we say each arrow gave rise to 100 flowers, that is only possible if we when we say yes, we become not separate from it. It's not something outside myself. I include the whole perspective, rather than limiting myself. Limiting the universe to me. To my idea of me. It's always a challenge on the first day of a retreat to begin. We actually were beginning long before this. If we try to find the beginning of the retreat, it's not possible. Did it begin the moment you arrived here? Did it begin the moment you began your journey? Did it begin the moment you woke up the day of your journey? Did it begin when you signed up for the retreat? Did it begin when you had the idea to come to the retreat? Did it begin when you first heard about the retreat? Did it begin the last time you were on a retreat? Did it begin when you began practicing? Did you begin practicing when you had the idea to begin practicing, and therefore that's when your retreat began? Beginningless. So when I say it's a challenge to begin, if I don't have a notion of beginning, it's no longer a challenge. It's just what it is. This is day one. That's it. This is what it is. Myself, I often have difficulties on the first day. Getting everything in position, how should we do it? There are new people, there are old people, it's a new place. Different, all sorts of new things. The fact is, everything is new at every moment, and so it's always new. It's always beginning. And the particular situation of the first day is that, yes, we are just beginning here in this place, in this situation. We have just arrived. After sitting for 3 days, something very different is happening. So when I begin talking on the first day, I have to take that into consideration. That I am in a different place, and you are too. And then I let go of that idea and see what happens. When I let go of that idea, we say that the right response can arise. I didn't know what I would say to you today. But staying present to what arises, I respond to the situation. We don't know what we will eat for lunch, but when we go sit and they serve the food, we will eat. We may have expectations. We may have desires for what we would like that lunch to be. But probably we will eat the food no matter what, despite those expectations. We might want a steak and some fine red wine and one of those cakes from Belen that we had yesterday. I can quite assure you that that will not be what we will have for lunch. But Tomas likes all of those things, so you never know. And when we have eaten our meal, we will not be discouraged thinking, oh, there's no point to eat this meal because in a few hours I will be hungry again. If we did that, we would never eat. We eat and fully enjoy what we eat, even if it doesn't correspond to what we wanted, and knowing that in a few hours we will need to eat again. And today we come and sit here and listen, and I talk, knowing that this is not definitive. That the talking will stop, and you may be thinking, I wish she would stop. Or you may be thinking, I hope she doesn't stop. Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand. I like it. Oh, I liked it better before. I don't know. But can we just receive the moment? Can I just receive your listening which is what you offer me, without an expectation of how you listen, what you're receiving in exchange, total listening or partial listening, or understanding or not understanding, no expectations. I just receive it. And that's what we can do on our cushions. That's by giving you all of these examples to come back to just what we are doing here, sitting here. Can we just receive the moment sitting on our cushion? And if so, the possibilities are unlimited, and the flowers are magnificent. And the sweetness of the moment is sweeter than anything you've ever imagined. And I'm telling you this, I'm telling you my experience, but don't believe me. Check it out for yourself. Try it yourself. What time are we? Any questions or comments? Did that resonate, or does that evoke anything for you, or you don't understand, or you would like more explanation?
Would you say that this yes, this fundamental yes, is not the opposite of no? It's not. It's something that actually could be another word.
Exactly. Because sometimes it involves saying yes to no, which means saying no. Exactly. It involves being open to whatever the situation presents. And maybe that's the expectation, is that if there is an expectation, it means an expectation of being open. I don't know. I don't know how it's being received. I don't even know what I'm saying, really. If I have an expectation that someone will understand what I'm saying, that I know what I'm saying, and that if they understand, then there will be a result, I'm no longer just present with what the situation is. I'm already beyond. I've closed the situation, in effect. I've limited it. Does that answer the question or no? Is that what you meant? No. You're looking doubtful. Well, I'm not sure which situation you're talking about, but ultimately, as I said the other night in Lisbon, there is nothing transmitted. And the moment, whatever the moment presents, is the answer. So if the individual is not hearing, is not listening, that is their answer. That is what they're offering. And of course, I have preferences sometimes. Of course, you know, on a personal level, I desire nothing more than the happiness of the people with whom I am sharing this moment. But if I limit myself to that, I'm not acknowledging what is happening for each individual. And I'm not acknowledging the richness of this moment. I'm closing off entire aspects. I'm limiting it to just one frame of those windows. And the truth is that it's all flowers. It's all richness. The unhappiness and the happiness, or the listening and the not listening. It's, you know, in a different context, maybe when you're teaching a product, but I'm not teaching a product. I have nothing. When you have teaching a product, something material. In the way that we learn when we go to school as children or something. Then there is a desire for a fixed result and there's an expectation. We measure it, but what I am saying is immeasurable. It cannot be measured. And the response cannot be measured either.